Have you ever noticed what has become urgent moments in our lives? Have you ever noticed that's kind of changed? The things that we are frantic over, the things that we do everything in our power to correct as quick as we can, those things have changed over time. For instance, you're heading out of town or you're heading to work and you get about halfway gone, you know, 10 or 15 miles away from the house, and you realize, hey, I left my cell phone at the house. And immediately you're in a panic. I've got to go back. I've got to get my cell phone because someone might just want to get a hold of me. Or you're surfing the net one night and you're trying to get some work done. You're trying to get some information for a paper or something you need to take to your boss. And all of a sudden on your screen is the blue screen of death. And you're like, oh no, oh no, what am I going to do now? What am I going to do? Or you're running late for work and you know you're not going to make it in time, and yet there is an urgency for you to go by Starbucks or Dunkin' Donuts to get your coffee in the morning. You just can't go without your coffee. Or it's the end of the day and you look down at your smartphone or your smartwatch and you realize, I don't have my steps in. So you start running around the house like a crazy person, you know. We get urgent. We get urgent about things that really aren't that urgent. I think we could all recognize that all of those things are really no big deal at all. None of them are earth-shattering. None of them are life and death. And yet we make such big deals out of such small things. Today we're going to look at Mark chapter 13. And in Mark chapter 13, we're going to find within this text Jesus identifying those things that truly should be urgent in our lives, those things that we really should be focusing our attention on and watching out for and getting ready for. And before we read this text, I just want you to understand that Jesus is just a few days from the cross, and he's been making the most of his time. He's been going into the temple courts and teaching to those who are willing to listen. And with everything that's facing Jesus coming up, his disciples are focused on the beauty of the temple. In fact, they call out, they said, you know, look at this temple, Jesus. It's so beautiful. And it was beautiful. It was built with white marble and limestone. It had some stones that were 80 tons, some that had been gilded with gold. It is said that it was so impressive, so white, that when the sun was shining and travelers were heading toward Jerusalem, they had to avert their eyes because it was so blinding, the sun shining off this white marble and limestone of the temple. And so Jesus responds to his disciples' question about the temple. And so I want to pick it up there. I want to read Mark chapter 13. Now I'm going to do something I don't normally do, and that is I am going to read the entire chapter of Mark 13. As he was leaving the temple, one of his disciples said to him, "Look, teacher, what massive stones, what magnificent buildings. Do you see all these great buildings?" replied Jesus. "Not one stone here will be left on another. Every one will be thrown down." As Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives opposite the temple, Peter, James, John, and Andrew asked him privately, "Tell us, when will these things happen? And what will be the sign that they are all about to be fulfilled?" And Jesus said to them, "Watch out that no one deceives you. Many will come in my name claiming, 'I am he,' and will deceive many. When you hear of wars and rumors of wars, do not be alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. Nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. There will be earthquakes in various places and famines. These are the beginning of birth pains. You must be on your guard. You will be handed over to the local councils and flogged in the synagogues. On account of me, you will stand before governors and kings as witnesses to them. And the gospel must first be preached to all nations. Whenever you are arrested and brought to trial, do not worry beforehand about what to say. Just say whatever is given you at the time. For it is not you speaking, but the Holy Spirit. Brother will betray brother to death, and a father his child. Children will rebel against their parents and have them put to death. All men will hate you because of me. But he who stands firm to the end will be saved. When you see that abomination that causes desolation standing where it does not belong, let the reader understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let no one on the roof of his house go down or enter the house to take anything out. Let no one in the field go back to get his cloak. How dreadful it will be in those days for pregnant women and nursing mothers. Pray that it will not take place in winter, because those will be days of distress unequaled from the beginning when God created the world until now and never to be equaled again. If the Lord had not cut short those days, no one would survive. But for those select, but for the sake of the elect whom he has chosen, he has shortened them. At that time, if anyone says to you, look, here's the Christ, or look, there he is, do not believe it. For false Christs and false prophets will appear and perform signs and miracles to deceive the elect, if that were possible. So be on your guard. I've told you everything ahead of time. But in those days following that distress, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from the sky and the heavenly bodies will be shaken. At that time, men will see the Son of Man coming in clouds with great power and glory. And he will send his angels and gather his elect from the four winds, from the ends of the earth to the ends of the heavens. Now learn this lesson from the fig tree. As soon as its twigs get tender and its leaves come out, you know that summer is near. Even so, when you see these things happening, you know that it is near, right at the door. I tell you the truth, this generation will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away. No one knows about that day or hour, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father. Be on your guard, be alert. You do not know when the time will come. It is like a man going away. He leaves his house and puts his servants in charge, each with his task, his assigned task, and tells the one at the door to keep watch. Therefore, keep watch, because you do not know when the owner of the house will be coming back, whether in the evening or at midnight, or when the rooster crows or at dawn. If he comes suddenly, do not let him find you sleeping. What I say to you, I say to everyone, watch. Now you might be feeling a little bit blur from this chapter. I mean, there's a whole lot of stuff being talked about here. And you might think to yourself, well, what does this have to do with the temple? It seems like he's talking about the end times. And I want you to understand that when the disciples ask the question, when is this going to happen to the temple? When is it going to be destroyed? In their minds, the temple destruction was the end time. So Jesus is answering their question. And this chapter is not about the destruction of the temple alone, and it's not about the end times alone. It is about the destruction of the temple and the end times together. They're intermingled throughout this entire chapter. And so it can be very confusing for us. And sometimes we want to go through this text and pick verse by verse what they are talking about. Is Jesus talking about the temple here? Or is Jesus talking about the end times here? Is Jesus talking about what's going to happen here in just a little while? Or is Jesus going to talk about what's going to happen when he finally returns? But I want you to try not to think about this chapter like that, because I don't think that was the point at all. It wasn't about whether or not we could recognize when the end times was coming. It was about whether or not we would watch and be ready for the end times to come. Did you know in the Bible there are 330 prophecies or references or allusions to Jesus' coming? Now, a little over 100 of them were allusions to Jesus' birth, which means about 200 of them are about his second coming. About his second coming. And so Jesus will, in fact, and does, in fact, speak about his second coming. And since this passage tells us that no one will know the day or the hour, it seems pointless to me to try to figure out the when of Jesus' coming. There have been people who have spent decades of their lives trying to research and figure out when Jesus would come. There have been people who said, Jesus will come this year, and when he didn't come this year, they said, well, Jesus will come this next year, and when he didn't come that next year, he said, well, Jesus will come in 5 years, and when he didn't come in 5 years, they finally said, well, I don't know what I'm talking about. You're never going to know when Jesus is coming. And you shouldn't know when Jesus is coming, because you need to live your life as if Jesus is coming today. Because Jesus might come today. He might be here today. And even if he doesn't come today, you might go meet him today. There's an urgency in Jesus' instruction here in this chapter. An urgency to be ready. The story goes that two fellows were standing on the side of a country road. They are dressed like road workers, and one is holding up a sign that says, "The end is near," while the other one is holding up a sign that says, "Repent." Now, several cars pass them by, paying them no attention. In fact, as the cars continue to come by, they speed up, trying to get past these guys as quick as they can, because they are considering them to be religious nuts. After several more cars speed past them, one of the fellows looks at the other one and says, "I don't think we're getting our message across." The other guy replies, "Yeah, I guess your sign should say, 'Bridge out,' and mine should say, 'Turn around.'" I'll let you sink in for a second there. I think it's important for us to recognize that we should be living with an urgency in our faith. See, they finally got it. We should all be watching. We should be ready. We should all be living as if time is short, because, like it or not, time is short. It is said that Satan called to himself the emissaries of hell, and he said he wanted to send one of them to earth to aid humanity in the ruination of their souls. So he asked which one would like to go, and one creature came forward and said, "I will go." Satan said, "Well, if I send you, what will you tell the children of men?" He said, "I will tell them that there is no heaven." Satan said, "They will not believe you. There is a bit of heaven in every human heart. In the end, everyone knows that right and good must have the victory. You may not go." Another one came forward, darker and fouler than the first. Satan said, "If I send you, what will you tell the children of men?" He said, "I will tell them there is no hell." Satan looked at him and said, "Oh no, they will not believe you. For in every human heart, there's a thing called conscience, an inner voice which testifies to the truth that not only will good be triumphant, but that evil will be defeated. You may not go." Then one last creature came forward, this one from the darkest place of all. And Satan said to him, "If I send you, what will you say to the women and men to aid them in the destruction of their souls?" And he said, "I will tell them there is no hurry." And Satan said, "Go." Satan said, "Go." Brothers and sisters, it is time for us to live our lives with a sense of urgency. It is a time for us not to only get ourselves ready for the Lord's return, but to go out and use every minute to get as many people ready as we possibly can for his coming. It is time for us to keep watch for the very things that Jesus called us to keep watch of in this chapter. And so I want to give you some of those things this morning. Things we ought to be ready for. Things we ought to keep watch for. And the first one is this: we need to be ready for deceivers. We need to be ready for those people who will try to deceive others. If you look at verses 5 and 6 in the ESV, this is what it says. 5 and 6, it says, "And Jesus began to say to them, 'See that no one leads you astray. Many will come in my name saying, I am he, and they will lead many astray.'" Jesus warns us. There are those that are trying to convince you and others that there is another God, that there is another Savior. They're trying to fool you. They're trying to deceive you. They're trying to get you off track. I believe that all of us would admit that there are no shortage of false gods in our world today. No shortage of them at all. Many have bowed down and made money their god. They worship at their retirement and bank account statements. They offer their energy and time and even their health on the altar of give me more, give me more. They pray to the day trader and the market guru for success and certainty. Today, more and more in our country, our planet, the planet itself, the creation of God that we are allowed to live on, has become a god. People placing their entire hope for the future in the hands of the inanimate planet that we reside on. Many have made their physique their god. And they get up early in the morning so they can do their devotions to their physique as they exercise every single day to make sure that everything's as good as it could possibly be. In fact, they meditate on the beauty of themselves in the mirror that is before them. I just want you to understand, these are all false gods. All false gods. And these are just a few of the many that people worship all around us. And the reason they worship them is because they have been deceived into believing that those things really will provide you with the hope of the future. 2 Corinthians 11:13-15, it says, these people are false apostles. They are deceitful workers who disguise themselves as apostles of Christ. But I'm not surprised. Even Satan disguises himself as an angel of light. So it is no wonder that his servants also disguise themselves as servants of righteousness. In the end, they will get the punishment their wicked deeds deserve. I want you to understand, you are constantly walking through a minefield of deceit. Every single day when you get up, you're walking through a minefield of deceit. And by the way, most of us have brought deceit right into our very lives, right into our very hearts, and then we find it on a phone or on a computer screen or on a TV screen, and we're quick to grab hold of the deceit that they tell us. Jesus says, be ready for deceit, deceivers. Not only that, Jesus says, be ready for suffering. Be ready for suffering. Verses 9 and 13 in the CSB says it like this, but you be on your guard. They will hand you over to Sanhedrins, and you will be flogged in the synagogues. And you will be hated by everyone because of my name. But the one who endures to the end will be delivered. Jesus warns them, and he warns us. He says, as time gets closer and closer for my return, by the way, every single day of our lives, we're getting closer and closer to the Lord's return. But he says, as time gets closer and closer, don't be surprised at suffering. It is coming. If they hated me, they are going to hate you, he says. If they hated me, they're going to hate you because you are claiming to serve me and follow me. In our world right now, there are Christians being tortured. There are Christians being imprisoned. There are Christians being put to death for their faith. We live fairly protected lives. But even here in our country, there is a growing hate towards Christianity. A growing hate. 1 Peter 4:12-14 in the Message says it like this, friends, when life gets really difficult, don't jump to the conclusion that God isn't on the job. Instead, be glad that you are in the very thick of what Christ experienced. This is a spiritual refining process with glory just around the corner. If you're abused because of Christ, count yourself fortunate. It is the Spirit of God and His glory in you that brought you to the notice of others. Now, I don't want anybody to think that you should go off and run after suffering. Hey, I want to suffer. Woohoo! You know, give me some more pain. Give me some more suffering. Hate me. But I do want us to understand that if we live for Christ visibly in our world, they are going to hate us. In fact, every single one of us should be getting some gruff from people around us, because our lives are shining out into the darkness and it's revealing the sin in their lives. And they don't like that. They don't like that. And so we should expect some suffering to come if we're actually living our faith for the Lord. James Guthrie woke up in a cell on the morning of his execution. His servant was weeping and said, Guthrie said, "Stop that at once. This is the day that the Lord has made. We will rejoice and be glad in it." This said Perpetua when they took her out into the arena to be killed by the beast. She said, "This is my day of coronation." This is my day of coronation. This is my graduation day. This is the day where Christ can be glorified in my life. When suffering comes, recognize that there is a gift of glory that can be focused on Christ. If you'll stand up truthfully, honestly, deliberately for Jesus. Be ready for deceivers. Be ready for suffering. Be ready for judgment. Like it or not, judgment is coming. Judgment is coming for everyone. 26, 27, 33, it says it like this. "Then everyone will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds with great power and glory. And he will send out his angels to gather those chosen ones from all over the world, from the farthest ends of the earth and heaven. And since you don't know when that time will come, be on your guard. Stay alert." Jesus wants every one of us to be ready for his return. He wants all mankind to be ready for his return. I've shared this with you before, but I'm going to share it with you again. Doug Mendenhall shares this brief parable, and it goes like this. Jesus called the other day to say he was passing through and wondered if he could spend a day or two with us. I said, "Sure, love to see you. When will you hit town? I mean, it's Jesus, you know, and it's not every day you get a chance to visit with him. It's not like it's your in-laws that you have to stop and decide whether there's advantages to having them come and stay." But that's when Jesus told me that he was actually at the convenience store by the interstate. I must have gotten that Bambi in the headlights look, because my wife hissed, "What is it? What's wrong? Who is that?" So I covered the receiver and I told her Jesus was coming and was going to arrive in 8 minutes. And she ran out of the room and started giving guidance to the kids in that effective way that Marine drill sergeants give guidance to recruits. My mind was already racing with what needed to be done next. All of a sudden it was 7 minutes. What am I going to do so that Jesus doesn't look at me and think, "Reprobate loser"? So I turned off the TV in the den, which was blaring some kind of weird, scary movie I'd been half watching. But I could still hear screams from the bedroom, so I turned off the reality show that it was tuned to. Plus, I turned off the kids' set out on the sun porch because I didn't want to have to explain John and Kate plus 8 to Jesus. 6 minutes now. My wife had already thinned out the magazines that had been accumulating on the coffee table. She put Christianity Today on top for a good impression. 5 minutes to go. I looked out the front window, but the yard work actually looked pretty good. And what could I improve in 4 minutes anyway? I did notice the mail had come, so I ran out to grab it. Mostly it was Netflix envelopes and a bunch of catalogs tied to recent purchases, so I stuffed it back in the box. Jesus doesn't need to know or get the wrong idea about how much online shopping we do. 3 minutes to go. I ran back in and picked up a bunch of shoes left by the door. Tried to stuff them in the front closet, but it was overflowing with heavy coats and work coats and snow coats and pretty coats and raincoats and extra coats. We live in the South. Why do we need so many coats? I squeezed the shoes in with 2 minutes to go. I plumped up sofa pillows. My wife tossed dishes into the sink. I scolded the kids. She shooed the dog. With 1 minute left, I realized something important. Getting ready for a visit from Jesus is not an 8 minute job. And then the doorbell rang. Getting ready for Jesus is not an 8 minute job. I want you to know, if you hear the trumpet blast of the Lord and you're not ready, it's too late. If you see the heavens split above you and you're not ready, it's too late. If you see angels gathering the faithful and you're not ready, it's too late. You either get ready now and be ready always, or you're not ready. Or you're not ready. 2 Peter 3, 9 and 10 says this, the Lord isn't really being slow about his promise, as some people think. No, he is being patient for your sake. He does not want anyone to be destroyed, but wants everyone to repent. But the day of the Lord will come as unexpectedly as a thief. Then the heavens will pass away with a terrible noise, and the very elements themselves will disappear in fire, and the earth and everything on it will be found to deserve judgment. What have you done with Jesus? How are you living for Jesus? These are the questions we need to ask ourselves so that we can be prepared. What have I done with Jesus? How am I living for Jesus? If we can't answer them in a way that would please him, we better figure out how to get those answers correct. So far, we've been looking at Jesus' warning, 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 warning. But there is one place in here where it's not a warning, but he still wants you to be ready. And the last thing you need to be ready for is you need to be ready to proclaim the gospel. Verses 9 and 10, the second half of 9 and verse 10, it says, but this will be your opportunity to tell them about me, for the good news must first be preached to all nations. I want you to know that every day we should be proclaiming the good news. We should be proclaiming what Jesus has done for us. We should be sharing the gospel message. In the face of deception or suffering, we have this unique opportunity to share what Jesus is doing and has done for us. Colossians chapter 4, verses 5 and 6, live wisely among those who are not believers and make the most of every opportunity. Let your conversation be gracious and attractive so that you will have the right response for everyone. As we continue to get closer and closer to Jesus' return or to our going to see him, we need to be prepared. We need to be ready. We need to be looking for the opportunities that are all around us to share with those who are lost about Jesus. In fact, as we realize our life is getting shorter and shorter, or Jesus' return is getting shorter and shorter, it should motivate us to share with every single person what Jesus has done for us. As Christians, we should be living with an urgency, and my question to you is, are you? Are you living with an urgency? We might be urgent over our smartphone being forgotten, or the computer screen telling us that a virus has infected. We might be urgent about those things, but are we urgent about telling people about Jesus Christ? Are we urgent about sharing the good news that will bring an eternity into someone's life? Satan wants to lull you to sleep. Satan wants to keep us all comfortable. He wants to convince us that we have done enough. But Jesus, he wants urgency.